Welcome to the Ghosts of Taos podcast. I'm your host, M. Elwell Romancito, and I'm going to walk you through some of the stories, tales, and rumors of the supernatural, ghosts, and the paranormal of Taos, New Mexico. Thank you for joining me. Season 1, Episode 6, The Legend of La Llorona. In northern New Mexico, a call made frequently to emergency dispatch services in the middle of the night is a request for a welfare check for a crying woman. People have reported hearing someone crying inconsolably in the night. They have also said they could sometimes see a woman wandering or floating in the Bent Street parking lot. The legend of La Llorona is a very old one, dating back to the days of the conquistadors. When people describe this weeping woman, she is said to be either beautiful, with long flowing black hair, or a crone. She wears either a white gown or black mourning dress. She roams the waterways, wailing into the night and searching for unattended and unwary children, the naughty ones, to drag, screaming to their cold drownings. No one knows when the legend began or where it came from, though the tales vary from source to source. They say that at just about any place where there are rivers and humans, the story of the doomed mother who drowns her two children is commonly told. Even in Ohio, where I grew up, there was a story surrounding a covered bridge about a crying, wailing woman, her two babies, and a no-good robber man. No matter where the legends come from, she always spends eternity looking for her dead children in the cold waters of ditches, arroyos, rivers, streams, and lakes. The calls pile up to 911 dispatch about the crying woman who roams Bent Street parking area. It's no secret that La Llorona has taken to showing herself to people who are unlucky enough to be out on the streets and the highways of northern New Mexico at night. We got an email from some visitors who asked if the road through Taos Canyon, especially right there in Cañon, was haunted. They said they had spent Sunday night in Taos and wondered if there were any ghost stories involved with the Highway 64 within the last few miles leaving the plaza headed up to Eagle Nest. They were also curious if locals liked to play tricks on people driving by. And they went on to describe something very interesting. The woman who emailed said we were going to turn around but decided we didn't want to know that nothing was there. We haven't been able to shake the feeling yet. Something just wasn't right about it. They said they saw a woman with her hands up to her face on a curve just a few miles out. She was wearing a lace dress that was blowing in the wind. When I replied that it sounded like a La Llorona sighting, she said she got chills again because the way I described the legendary creature, she said that was what she and her boyfriend saw. The only difference in what my boyfriend, and he was driving, saw was that I thought she was facing us and he thought her back was more toward us, and the feeling was that she was sad, and when we saw her, both of her hands were up to her face as if crying or screaming. The black lace, the long dress that was flowing in the wind, it was old, from another time period. Strange and exciting, yet evoking a feeling that she said it was hard for them to shake. We're looking forward to being able to resume tours with Ghosts of Taos, but in the meantime, I would encourage you to visit our website and also to listen to the other episodes of the Ghosts of Taos podcast. We will have announcements and upcoming events. There are investigations to explore, videos, interviews, etc. Do you have a story you'd like to relate of a paranormal Taos experience? We not only spin ghost stories and tales of the supernatural, we collect them. Email us at tausexperience@gmail.com and tell us all about it. The book, Ghosts and Haunted Places of Taos, is written and illustrated by M. Elwell Romancito and is available on our website, ghostsoftaos.com, and through lulu.com. La Llorona of Taos Canyon by M. Elwell Romancito. It was colder than usual for the time of year. Up in Taos Canyon, there were still mounds of snow left over from the first premature snowfall of the season. The rest of the winter blanket did not seem to be far behind, but that night the sky was crackling clear and for a moment the wind bore no promise of more. The wind soughed through the crevices in the house. The drafts caused the fire in the wood stove to seethe brighter from moment to moment. That night, the moon was almost full. I might have been reading. I might have been simply thinking. I don't remember. All I remember was the writing. High over the sound of the wind came a thin wailing. A crying sound that might have been a coyote or a baby. I looked at my cats. They had heard it too, and they were puffed up 3 times their normal size. Their eyes were wild. I could tell they were wrestling with the desire to go outside and find out what was there, and then another one to run under the bed. Then I heard it again. Instead of sounding like an animal, this time it had a distinctly human tenor. I got up from the chair and peered out the window, but I couldn't see anything because the inside lights were on. Again the cry came. My hand went to the light switch, and as it did, the wail articulated into a cry for help. I threw on a coat, and I left the fireside, and as I made my way to the river that ran across the front of my land, I saw the mounds of snow that had hid in the shadows during the day and did not melt, and in the blue moonlight they glowed a ghostly white, like humps of brooding animals. Then I heard the cry again, without the buffer of the warmth of the house, and the sound was alarming, not because someone needed help, but because it had an otherworldly shimmer to it, like pure dread. I felt my own hair rise away from my skin. The road was especially treacherous in this area, not only because of the twists and turns of the canyon road, which I call the Black Snake, but because of patches of black ice that form. There is also the menace of drunk drivers who barrel up and down the asphalt backbone in a cavalier fashion and into the face of death. Sure enough, there, some ways up the river, I could see an overturned car. A broad tree bore a great gash. The car, a large, early 1970 gas hog, had probably hit a patch of black ice, or the driver had miscalculated the severity of the curve and had plowed into the tree. Both doors were thrown open and the door on the passenger side was nearly ripped from the car's body. Then I saw movement in the deep ravine of the river that cut into the rock. I heard a moaning. "Are you all right?" Somehow I knew the question was ridiculous, but I could think of nothing else to shout until I could get closer and see what had happened. "Help me, my baby! My baby's not breathing!" The cry became words. I was running anyway, but the urgency made me hurry even more. I came up the bank and could see a woman struggling with a small form in her arms. "Please help me! I can't climb out! I've hurt my leg! My baby, please help my baby!" I tried to negotiate the steep bank, but soon realized that I would have to run back into the house for a rope or something to pull her out of the ravine. "I'll go get help and a rope. Don't panic. I'll help you." "Don't panic," I said, but I felt my heart leaping into my throat. I ran like the devil inside. Inside, I grabbed the phone book, my hands trembling and my eyes watering with cold and alarm, and when I finally reached either the sheriff or the state police, I was so upset I didn't know which I called. I became impatient with the dispatcher because I had trouble making the exact location understood. Finally, in frustration, I hung up and ran to the garage for a rope, flashlight, and blankets. Back at the river's edge, I could tell the woman had not had any luck getting breath back into her child. Her wailing had subsided to a miserable whimper that was so self-absorbed she didn't hear me when I called out to say that I had returned. I turned the flashlight onto the swirling river water. She was sitting in the middle of the current, a child maybe 3 or 4 in her arms. She was a tall, thin, beautiful Hispanic woman, maybe in her late 20s. Her hair was wet and long and reached down over her shoulders and across her arms. Her mascara was running down her face in long, dark smears. I tied the rope to a tree and wound it around another for leverage and threw the looped end down toward her. "Grab the rope. I'll pull you up." She acted as if she didn't hear me. "Please, grab the rope." She looked up finally, and I diverted the beam of flashlight so as not to confuse her. "I can't. My hands are frozen stiff. Please help my baby." I secured the blankets over my shoulder, put the flashlight in my pocket, and went down the side of the ravine. My boots were nearly waterproof, but I could feel the gripping chill of the river water. The woman was whimpering again, a lost sound without hope. "My baby's dying. My baby's dying. My baby's dying." In the morose light of the moon, I could see the pale face of the child, an unnatural shade of blue even in this light. I undid a blanket and handed it to her. She wrapped up the child. I put another blanket over her shoulders. "Come on, we can get up the side with the rope. I'll be behind you." "No." Her voice was suddenly calm. "My baby's dead. There is no hope." "There's still hope," I said, but I didn't know if that were true. "I've called for help. They could be here any minute. Please, let's get out of this water." "No, take my baby." She handed me the small bundle of her child. "Take my baby. I'm doomed." I looked up at her, not believing or understanding her words. The moonlight fell harshly across her tear-streaked face. Before my eyes, she dissolved into the river and disappeared. The bundle in my arms became weightless. There was nothing there except for the blanket. In panic, I looked up at the edge and saw that the wrecked car was gone. And as the river water finally punched its way through the seams of my boots, I heard the sirens of the rescue vehicles as they careened up the canyon. And I felt very, very cold. This episode of the Ghosts of Taos podcast was brought to you by Taos Art Supply, located at 208 Ranchitos Road, Suite C. Thomas Merton said, "Art enables us to find ourselves and lose ourselves at the same time." Thank you for listening. If you're curious about the podcast, your host, our stories, or other information about the Ghosts of Taos, visit our website at ghostsoftaos.com for photos, videos, books, and more. I hope you'll join me again for the Ghosts of Taos podcast. Until next time.